Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Today is Sunday, March 26, 2006, and this is show number 36. Well, I hope you got a lot of time to listen today, because on top of my regular show, I've got a review of the work I did Friday night to put Windows XP on my MacBook Pro. That's a little teaser so you listen to the end of the show. Anyway, I had a great week. As you recall, I washed my car on Sunday knowing it was going to rain this week, but it all worked out well because while it did rain on Tuesday, my car was relatively clean and it rained on the way home, so I was able to wipe it down with a wet chamois late Tuesday night. This might sound silly to normal people, but to the clean obsessed, it gave me infinite joy that I had the only clean car in Los Angeles from Wednesday through Friday. As though that were not exciting enough, I had even more fun on Wednesday. I got to meet my good friend Daryl Shandro of the Blind Access Journal podcast, hosted at blindaccessjournal.com, for lunch. He was out in Los Angeles for the CSUN Disability Conference. I was really worried when he asked if we could meet because people who aren't in LA don't quite understand that you might say I'm in LA, but that could be really far away in time. One thing I told him was that if you ask someone in LA, how far is it to blah, 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 they will never tell you the distance. They will always answer in time because it's completely irrelevant how far it is. It matters how long is it going to take to get there. It could be 10 miles and take you an hour. It could be 5 miles, take you 25 minutes. So anyway, luckily he was right at the airport and I can practically spit on the airport from my office building. All right, I can't actually spit because they keep the windows locked shut so you don't jump out and that kind of stuff, but you get my point. Anyway, I drove up to get him. He always begs off on driving. What's the deal with that? But anyway, we went for a great lunch at the Cheese and Olive in Venice. This restaurant makes these awesome bread balls positively soaked in garlic butter. You don't even actually need lunch, but of course we managed to chow that down too. So we waddled out of there and took a stroll down on the beach. Daryl claims that left to his own devices, he'd quit his job and become a beach bum, and I think he actually would. He just loved the walk on the beach. The surf was pretty mild, so we were able to actually walk down to the water's edge and touch the 57-degree ocean water. I think that convinced Daryl that we wouldn't go swimming that day. Being geeks, we spent most of the walk talking about microphones and headsets and podcasting, but hey, it made us happy, so that's what's important. I stuck a couple of pictures of us down to the beach in the show notes over at podfeet.com, so you can go check that out if you like. By the way, I met Daryl last year at the Podcast Expo, and we're really looking forward to meeting up again this September. Don't forget to sign up, Daryl. You promised. Whoa, somebody dropped something outside. That was loud. Anyway, listener feedback. Last week, I referred to listener Robert from Green Bay, Wisconsin, as helping with the RSS screensaver question. While it was listener Robert, he's actually from New Jersey. Robert is an art director who does some great-looking design work. You can check out his work at home.earthlink.net/TildeRobZilla. It was actually listener Paul who's from Green Bay. It's been fun chatting with him online because I sailed to Green Bay when I was a little girl, all the way across Lake Michigan to Wisconsin from Michigan. My dad entered me in a sabot race in Green Bay. That's the little dinghy sailboats you use on a big sailboat to get to shore. I was about 8 years old, and this was my very first race, sort of an out-and-back thing where we were supposed to round a buoy. Well, I got near the buoy, but the other kids were already on their way back, so I just turned around, and I turned around early, and I won! And I came back, and I was all happy because I won, and my dad tried to explain to me that what I did was wrong because he said I cheated, but I didn't see the logic in his position because he didn't understand that if I'd gone all the way around the buoy, I wouldn't have won. I never was able to get that point across to him. Anyway, Paul from Green Bay, Wisconsin, asked if I'd give my opinion on the usefulness of the Wacom tablet that he saw in my favorite gadget listing. I think maybe I'm like a lot of people that have the same conflict I had with the Wacom. I couldn't figure out why I needed it, but I really, really wanted to buy one because everybody swore by them. But for the life of me, I couldn't come up with a logical reason why I should spend $100 on a little toy like this. Basically, it's a tablet that you can use a pen to do your artwork with. I didn't need it. I just wanted it, though. So one day I broke down and bought it, and I never looked back. For use with Photoshop or Photoshop Elements, it's the only way to really select with magnetic lasso tool. There's something so natural about using a pen versus using a mouse. We've been using mice so long we don't remember how wrong that felt when we first started using them. I don't know if the pen is inherently natural to us or whether we've just learned to think of it as natural, but it seems so much easier to control and do what you want with the pen. I think you actually have to do any kind of drawing. This is actually an ideal tool. Listener Phyllis is a 65-year-old grandmother who enjoys listening to the NoSilicast, and she was curious about the Apple headphone lanyard that I said I use with the Nano. She had read some reviews that were unfavorable. The main complaint seemed to be that they said it does not stay connected and cause the Nano to actually fall off, and that the sound quality deteriorates over the first few weeks. I thought she wanted to ask whether I was still as happy with mine as when I first gave the review. Well, I'm definitely still happy with the lanyard headphones. I use these things all the time. I wonder if the people who had them fall off didn't plug them in all the way. Because that happened to me a couple of times. I'd start jogging and all of a sudden I'd feel it coming loose and I reached out and grabbed it. And so now what I do is I just look right at the Nano when I plug it in to make sure there's no gaps between the connector and the Nano. Since I started actually looking at it when I connected it, I haven't had a problem with it. As far as sound quality, I'm no audiophile, that's for sure. But I haven't noticed any degradation in the sound. One of the things I like best about these headphones is how well they stay in, because there's nothing pulling on them when you're jogging like there is with traditional headphones. It's not like the wire is actually really pulling on them, because the two headphones are connected to the lanyard on either side. So the wire doesn't really pull on the lanyard when you jump around. I hope this helps you, Phyllis, and keep listening to the NoSilicast. I'm really happy you're there. Listener Slough has given a great tip to solve a problem I had. Do you ever wish there was a keyboard shortcut for an operation you do frequently in an application? In the Mac operating system, it turns out there's a built-in function to assign shortcut keys to menu choices in one or all applications. I think I doodled around with this before, but I could never get it to work. I think it took Slough 3 emails to convince me to try it again, each time giving me tips on how to get it done. I don't mean to imply that it was this hard, I just mean it took Slough's persistence to get through my dense head. Anyway, on to the tip. First, open an application for which you want a shortcut. Find the menu item you want to run and make a note of exactly how it's shown on screen. Capital, not capital, does it have 3 dots after it, whatever it's got. For this example, we use the one I wanted to do, which is the insert command in Excel. It's spelled with a capital I, which is important. It's good at this point to think of the keystroke you want to use because it will help you if you peruse the menus for existing shortcuts and make sure that keystroke isn't already in use. Here's the tricky part, and this is the big clue that Slough gave me. You have to quit the application before you create the shortcut. I think this is where I was tricked up before and Slough came to my rescue. Now, open the System Preferences, Keyboard and Mouse Control Panel, and click on the Keyboard Shortcuts tab. Click the plus sign at the bottom, and then find the application you want to work with in the pull-down menu. I discovered that if your application is in a subfolder within the Applications folder, it's not going to show up in the pull-down. And that was the case with the Microsoft products, because they put them in a folder called Microsoft, so you can't find Excel at the top level. No worries, though. You can just browse to the application by pulling all the way down to Other, and then browse for your application. Once you've selected the application, type in the name of the menu exactly as it was written in the application. If you're like me, that means going back into the application again because your feeble old brain has already forgotten the command. Or maybe you're smarter than me and you actually wrote it down. Then tab to the next field and enter the keystroke you want to use. Now open the application again and you'll see the keystroke you entered as a shortcut in the menu as though it were there all along. So where you would see Command X for cut, if you had assigned an insert command like I was talking about, you could see it just like that. You'd see it right next to it. I did try this in Photo Elements where the criminal minds over at Adobe somehow didn't realize that the crop command would be the most used command in the entire program, and for some reason I was still never able to get it to work with a shortcut. The menu blinks as though it's going to do the crop command, but nothing actually goes on. The crop doesn't happen. I think this tip will help in getting the better behaved applications to work, though. So thanks, Slough, for the tip and for the persistence in getting me to test it. Let's see, I wanted to make yet another mention of the great product Feeder written by Steve Harris over at reinventedsoftware.com that I use to write my show notes and publish my podcast feed. If you're thinking about doing a podcast on the Mac, you have to get this application before you even start. He's added a bunch of new features to make it easier to understand how to put in enclosures, how to get all the tags, iTunes, and otherwise set correctly, and uploading of the images to be even easier. One thing I love is that he's done some color coding on the HTML links so that when I'm typing in my show notes, I can find my links easier for editing. He's very, very responsive as a developer. There was a small glitch in the software last week that made it hard for me to publish, but within a few hours, he had written back to me to tell me how to make it work. He comes out with updates so often that I told him in a recent email that if I don't get a feeder update every week, I worry that maybe he's not okay. I better check on him. Well, I've mentioned a few times that I'm an engineer, and I grew up in the day of reverse Polish notation calculators, or RPN. The cool thing about RPN calculators is that they're very efficient, using many fewer keystrokes than the traditional calculator. The downside is that you have to do everything backwards. The upside is that when you get good at it, you can work much faster. The downside is that when you get good at it, you become completely incapable of using a standard calculator without assistance. Let me give an example of how it works. Let's say you want to do the calculation 3 plus 5. On those fancy schmancy TI calculators that they're making all the kids use that cost $100 for crying out loud, and I've had to buy 4 or 5 of them so far, you would type in 3 plus 5 equals. On an RPN calculator, you would type in 3, enter, 5 plus. See how it's kind of backwards? In this example, they both used 4 keystrokes, so there's no advantage of doing it backwards. But let's take it up a notch to illustrate the advantage of RPN. What if the calculation were 2 times the quantity 3 plus 5? On the normal calculator, you'd have to type in 2 times parentheses 3 plus 5 close parentheses, which is 7 keystrokes. On the RPN calculator, you would type in 2, enter, 3, enter, 5 plus, which is only 6 keystrokes. All right, everybody thinks I'm a nutball at this case, but stay with me. As the calculations get more and more advanced, the advantage increases. I raised my son Kyle, who's only 15, and, you know, still has manual dexterity and a fast mind, and we raced on an interest rate calculation. You know, the ones with the amount times 1 plus I to the something over something else power kind? I beat him by a split second, and I used 2 fewer keystrokes. And that was, I'm 47, he's only 15, so I think that's pretty good. Well, the reason I brought all this up, and most of you are probably falling into a boredom-induced coma as I talk about my calculator, but the two of you who are still listening would be excited to know that my associate Mike sent me a link to where I can download an HP RPN calculator for the Mac that looks exactly like my HP 11C from college that I am still using. They have a whole bunch of models over at homepage.mac.com/MBA/nonpareil, N-O-N-P-A-R-E-I-L. There's a link in the show notes so you don't actually have to write it down. I'm unnaturally excited about this. I guess it's the pleasure of working with a calculator where I know where every function is for complex calculations, and it looks so cool. It looks exactly like it. I included a picture in the show notes, so the two of you who are still listening can go and check it out for nostalgia, or maybe you want to download it to learn how to be more efficient. Well, it's time for another installment of Weird and Wacky Websites. Ages ago, there was a really funny web link that I loved, and by the time I decided to feature it on the Weird and Wacky Website section, it was gone. I was really bummed. Now, I'm very excited that this link is back, and now it's even better. This one is going to be hard to explain, but you have to check it out at planetdan.net. Picture a dummy of U.S. President George Bush falling down through a bunch of large balls. The dummy is articulated so that he bends at all the appropriate places, and he flops all over the place as he falls. Sounds really stupid as I'm describing it, but the fact that someone actually spent time doing the physics and math to make this work just cracks me up. If he gets stuck, it turns out you can kind of grab him with your mouse and lift him up and over obstacles and let him go again. Of course, while you got a hold of him, you won't be able to resist giving him a shake like a rag doll. The old version had a woman in a bikini instead of George, so I suppose you could question my assertion that this version is an improvement. Check it out, this amazingly silly waste of time, and let me know if you like it. It's a special week this week because we've actually got 2 wild and wacky websites. My friend Dave alerted me to shotgunrules.com, which is a very important site you need to read if you're concerned about paying accurate attention to the rules of calling shotgun for a drive in the car. For those of you who might not be familiar with the term shotgun refers to the front passenger seat of an automobile. Calling shotgun is the act of claiming the position of shotgun for oneself. As this position is the most coveted of all positions when riding in a car, the following list of rules has been created to ensure that shotgun can be acquired in a fair and equitable manner by any passenger of an automobile. At this site, you'll learn the history of shotgun, how it must be said, where it must be said, what you should be wearing when it's declared, and several subtle caveats to the game. I urge you to go read this important information to ensure that you're in compliance with all of the rules and regulations, and also to pick up a copy of the official Shotgun Rules Handy Pocket Guide. Well, as promised, I'm going to tell you all about how I installed Windows XP on my MacBook Pro. I convinced my boss to buy me a MacBook Pro on the grounds that it was important for us to understand the new technology opportunities of an Intel-based Mac. I wasn't just faking to get a new computer here, but I know a lot of people are arguing about why on earth you'd want to put XP on a Mac, but from my perspective, it can only be good to have options. I imagine a world where a virus sweeps through and destroys one operating system, and I'm not even saying which one, maybe it's the Mac, and we could all simply switch to another operating system and keep working. I also find that I can do about 90% of my job on the Mac, but there's a few things that only run on Windows which are vital to my job, so I have to be able to switch. Of course, the ideal situation will be when we're able to run both operating systems side by side without rebooting, but for now, a dual boot system is our only option. Dual boot means that when you boot up, you're given a choice of which operating system to choose. In order to go to the other one, you have to restart the computer. As you all probably know, there was a contest to see who could figure out how to get Windows to boot on the Mac, and some guys completed it in about a week and a half ago and posted the instructions online at onmac.net. I really like this contest because a guy posted the contest and he put up some front money and then he asked other people to throw money in the pot. When it finished, it was actually worth $13,854 by the time they solved it. In the last week, people have been posting more drivers to make this work even better. So my friend Ryan and I decided we needed to do it to my Mac. The risk was low, but it was still very exciting. I was kind of glad that it was on a work computer that I didn't personally spend $2,500 or $3,000 buying. I absolutely do not recommend trying to put Windows XP on your Mac for the faint of heart or for anyone who does not have a Windows specialist willing to help. So first, I bribed the special team to help us with this monumental task by offering Chinese food. I was in charge of typing in the commands. Ryan's friend Aaron was in charge of reading the instructions when we were too dumb to think of it. My husband Steve was there to provide moral support and cheering. My son Kyle was in charge of wearing funny hats. You can see the photo log in the on the website. And then Ryan did like the actual work, the technical stuff. So I've included photos and some quick videos at podfeet.com, so head on over there so you can hear Steve say things like, "Whoa, that doesn't look good," and Ryan talk about how much he hates the Windows startup music, and to hear our screams of glee when we finally got XP up on the Mac. Yes, we chose to do this for fun on a Friday night. And it really was fun. I mean, we really, really liked it. Trust me. Okay, we're geeks. Anyway, you wouldn't be listening if you weren't a geek too, so sue me. Anyway, Ryan created the Slipstream CD using a Windows PC before he came, and that's a CD that has Windows XP on it plus some other stuff we had to have to make this thing go. He burned it with one of those cool new laser engraving burners. I don't know if you've seen it, but it actually burns the CD on one side, and then you flip it over, and it engraves your artwork on the other side. And he made it where it says Windows XP for Mac, and he put three Apple logos with the little Windows logo inside of it. It's monochromatic. I can't say black and white because it's gold and darker gold, but it looks really cool. I'm going to keep that. I'll probably keep that CD forever. It's really, really nice. So here's a step-by-step description of our amazing adventure. First, we had to install OS X from scratch. So we took the OS X Tiger installer CDs or DVDs and ran the installer. This is where we made a mistake. Before we started, we were talking about the fact that the printers take up a ton of space on disk, like a gig for the printer files. And we're talking about how dumb it is and how whenever you install it, you got to remember to turn that off and only install the printers you need. But of course, we forgot and we installed all of them. So I have to go back and scrape them out of my operating system to harvest some space. Now this is, it starts to get tricky pretty quickly. The new Macs use what's called Extensible Firmware Interface, that's EFI, instead of the BIOS like the older Intel machines. I don't really have the foggiest idea what that means, but it's an important step installing Windows on the Mac. So what you have to do at this point is you have to bless the folder with EFI in it. Blessing the folder means identifying the folder containing the operating system and writing that information to the boot blocks, which is where the Macintosh looks for it at startup. Normally, the system folder would be blessed, but in this case, the EFI has to be blessed, which is what will give us the choice of OS X or XP when we boot up. There's a nice long cryptic command that gets typed into the terminal to achieve that. Now that OS X is installed, we can partition the disk. You do that by opening the disk utility and choosing partition. I chose the minimum size for XP because I wanted to keep as much free space for the Mac side because I'm just a total disk hog. I mean, I actually have every digital photograph I've ever taken on my laptop. It's really cool to be able to just whip up pictures from any event in the last 5 years. But anyway, so we chose the minimum size for Windows XP, which was 6.89 gig. I think I'm going to regret that in the end game because the way I did it, I can actually see it from both sides, and it would have been nice to be able to have a little more space over there. We'll see. The other reason I need more space on the Mac side is it's research department Niraj's fault. He keeps giving me all those crazy applications that he makes me load, so it's his fault. Yeah, that's it. Anyway, after partitioning the drive, when we rebooted, we were faced with an Apple logo, and if we click the down arrow, it switched to a Windows logo. This was fun, so we did a lot. Up, down, Apple, Windows. It was fun. Anyway, we noticed something odd. The Windows logo would turn upside down sometimes, and it turned out that was a portent of things gone wrong. We never did figure out what we screwed up there, but it did get weird. So after it was done getting weird, we got some strange screens that I didn't really understand, and we had to mess around with them a couple of times. This was where Aaron was really helpful. There was this screen that had... some real ASCII-looking text in the middle of the screen, but then this rectangle in the upper left-hand corner that was light blue, and it had strange colors, and it was really weird, and we had read in the instructions that it said that it would go dead for like 3 minutes. You'd get no feedback, so we sat there, and we're watching it, and, you know, like 4 minutes go by when Aaron actually reads what's on the screen, and it says, select any key to continue. Okay, well, I guess that's why she's in graduate school. Anyway, the instructions for this whole process are pretty good, but unfortunately, because each piece of hardware seems to react differently, there's many different twists and turns. So we got messed up for a bit while we were following the 20-inch iMac instructions accidentally. We had to take a 90-degree turn and go over and find the MacBook Pro instructions. So we had to do some stuff twice, and if you held a gun to my head, I couldn't explain to you what we did next. We kind of went back and forth a couple of times. Finally, we got to Windows XP setup, so I figured, we just must be minutes away. But how naive I am. It was still an hour and 15 minutes till we would actually go live. We were finally faced with a screen where we had to pick the unpartitioned space, that was the 6.89 gig that we had there, and declare that we wanted it formatted. I chose FAT as the format because FAT32 is an ancient file system that can be read and written to by both Mac and Windows operating systems. This is a good thing to know if you're trying to make a disk that will be dealt with by both. There's two big limitations to FAT before you get all excited. You can't put files bigger than 4 gigabytes on it, and the total volume can't be bigger than 32 gig. And you can't have file names longer than something like 32 characters, and while that's a lot of characters, that number includes the path name of all of the embedding folders, so you really got to be careful with that. For my purposes, I wanted to use FAT so that I could drag and drop files in from the Mac side and read it on Windows and bring them back the other way. So now that we've got it partitioned, at this point in the gene splicing, Kyle joined us wearing a SeaWorld hat for no reason whatsoever, but it brought some important perspective to our activities. For some reason, he was not as fascinated with what we were doing as we thought it was. Now, we're on to the step of actually setting up Windows. I think this is the actual Windows install thingy, not to be confused with the last 12 times we've seen a screen implying that Windows is imminent. So we saw the screen that said setup is copying files. It got up to 85%, says Windows XP Professional Setup. Please wait while Windows setup is complete. And that's when Kyle couldn't contain his excitement and came down wearing my father's 1948 Homburg hat that my mother gave him for Christmas. The goofy expression on his face did not exactly bring along the classiness of this antique hat as it was intended, but that's what Kyle brings to the world, and so I just enjoy it. Luckily, my mother is a big fan of his silliness as well. I really enjoyed the irony of watching Windows on the MacBook Pro, like when the installer showed a splash screen saying, "An exciting new look." Ooh. And then the next one came up and said, "Try the easiest Windows yet." Just seeing that on your Mac is just gives you things that make you go, "Ooh." Well, Kyle had kept up a good front of pretending that this was fascinating to him, but he finally succumbed to the boredom and that this really was for him. Picture this. We're riveted to the screen. We're oohing and aahing. We're exclaiming with intense excitement. And we look over and Kyle is sound asleep on the floor. I mean, passed out cold. No pillow, just face right out on the ground. Oh, that was pretty fun. So anyway, finally we have liftoff. We actually see the screen go black. Then there's a Windows cursor. Ryan exclaims with excitement, "That's a Windows cursor!" Then we have the final phase of the setup starts up. Yes, we're not quite there. We were very sad that the annoying music didn't play. Brian actually hates it. He talked about how much he can't stand hearing this music play every time he has to load XP. Well, we started off this experiment at 7:23 p.m. and we finished it at 10:28 p.m., so just a smidge over 3 hours. Remember that this didn't include the time for Ryan to actually create the XP disk, so I can't really estimate the full cycle time. And it's also possible that if we'd paid attention, it would have been even faster. Overall, the operating system runs extremely quickly on the MacBook Pro hardware, which is cool. I had to download a bunch of drivers today to get the networking going, and I also was able to get some limited sound. Only the headphone jack will work as of today, not the built-in speakers. But I've got the wireless networking going, and I've installed the wired driver. Still got to test that and see whether it's actually working. There's a link in the show notes to the wiki at onmac.net where you can keep track of what drivers are available. Certain things like the EyeSight doesn't work yet, but there's a lot of other things that are working quite well. Of course, the first thing I had to do was download Firefox, get rid of the icon for Internet Explorer. I downloaded openoffice.org so I could do some stuff in there. But I got to tell you, the web browsing on this thing is fast. I saw an article recently that said it was the MacBook Pro was the fastest dual-core 2.0 gigahertz machine on the market, and I'm thinking they're right. I don't want to actually say it's faster than the Mac side, but it might be. It was actually really, really fast, so this is going to be a lot of fun to show off tomorrow, and really looking forward to it. In closing, let me leave you with this final image in your mind. As we sighed with pleasure and reveled in the excitement of an adventure completed, we looked over at the MacBook Pro and saw the ironic but ominous words pop up on the screen. "Your computer may be at risk." Ooh. Well, on that somber note, we'll end this extra long edition of the NoSillaCast podcast. I love all the feedback that's coming in, so please drop me a line at allison@podfeet.com or enter a comment on the show blog over at podfeet.com. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.